The National Coronavirus Command Council has decided to enforce a nationwide lockdown for 21 days with effect from midnight on Thursday, the 26th of March.
That was 5 years ago in 2020, when life as we knew it came to an abrupt halt around the world.
China closed off Wuhan, a city of 11 million people, to contain a deadly virus.
It has not been tried before as a public health measure.
In the days and weeks ahead, we expect to see the number of cases, the number of deaths, and the number of affected countries climb even higher.
In the blink of an eye, between one sunset and the next sunrise, the country learns of working from home, going to school through the lens of a computer camera, and shutting down industries.
Fellow South Africans, this is the most definitive Tuma Mina moment for our country. If we act together, if we act now, and if we act decisively, I am sure we will overcome it.
In this mini podcast series, the Jacaranda FM news team will help tell the story of COVID-19, from the so-called Sunday night family meetings with the president to the stories of heartbreak, survival, and learning how to fit a mask. We tell you how COVID-19 shaped and changed our lives forever and educated humanity about our fragile existence. We all breathe a collective sigh of relief when the national state of disaster and the COVID-19 lockdown restrictions came to an end. But for many, the psychological hangover of the restrictions can still be felt today. 5 years later, Master Chaba Sefularo looks at the good, the bad, and the ugly side of measures enforced by the South African government in a desperate bid to save lives.
At the height of the pandemic, World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus made the clarion call for global efforts to promote universal access to healthcare services and investment in health systems to tackle this public health crisis and future ones. The initial fear was that countries would simply run out of hospital beds and medical care resources, and to prevent that, a safe distance was promoted.
We must keep adhering to tried and tested measures that keep each and all of us safe. This means maintaining physical distance, wearing face masks, practicing hand and respiratory hygiene, avoiding crowded indoor places, and meeting people outside. These simple yet effective measures will save lives.
Fellow South Africans, who could ever forget our own family meetings with President Cyril Ramaphosa?
From midnight on Thursday, 26th March, until midnight Thursday, the 16th of April, all South Africans will have to stay at home. I have accordingly directed the South African National Defence Force to be deployed to support the South African Police Service in ensuring that the measures we are announcing are implemented. South African citizens and residents arriving from high-risk countries will automatically be placed under quarantine for 14 days. Non-South Africans arriving on flights from high-risk country we prohibited a week ago will be turned back.
What started as 21 days became 750 days of varying levels of lockdown. The army was unleashed onto the streets to help police maintain the lockdown law and order. The new normal didn't come as normal to a society that all of a sudden found itself restricted in the most basic of ways. From the hard lockdown at alert level 5, when the pandemic was at its peak and the health system was still finding its feet to curb and treat the rapid spread of deadly infections, down to alert level 1, when the spread of the virus decreased and a substantial amount of the population were vaccinated. Enacted in terms of the Disaster Management Act, the regulations included the suspension of domestic and international travel, compulsory mask wearing and screening, and mass gatherings were prohibited. Only frontline employees with the necessary personal protective equipment, or PPE as we came to know it, were allowed to go out. And we all shifted family check-ins to house party, Zoom and WhatsApp video calls. 5 years later, if you ask around, most people will still remember some of these regulations. 37-year-old avid runner and fitness enthusiast Khumulemo Motaung from the Northwest remembers some of the rules, including those that became social media sensations.
So lockdown regulations that I remember would be, of course, that there were the different levels of lockdown. I just don't remember how did it cascade into looser controls and tighter controls. But yes, there was the wearing of the face masks and being a 1.5 meter distance between people when in public spaces. I remember that there was no sale of alcohol and cigarettes because they were considered non-essential products. I remember that there was a curfew. Not sure what the hours were, though.
Of course, in true South African style, we found a way to laugh through the uncertainty, the fear, and the pain. At first, there was the pineapple beer craze, and then yeast became a bestseller as people started baking bread. And last but not least, the phrase, when people zol.
But also, when people zol, they put saliva with the paper, and then they share that zol.
It was made famous by then Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Minister Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who was tasked with overseeing government's response to the pandemic.
As you know, besides the effects of tobacco itself on the person's lungs, but also the way sometimes tobacco is shared does not allow for social distancing, but also actually encourages the spread of the virus, because when people share a cigarette, obviously if one of them has the virus, it will be shared amongst them. And then they'll go home and then spread it at home. And even those who do tobacco and make a zol, imboza. Sometimes when they zol, I'll read at some stage what one person said about that zol, because he says when people zol, they put saliva on the paper and then zol, and then they share that zol. So it means they are also share, if one of them has a virus, they are sharing that person's saliva, but also they are moving saliva from one to the other.
There's since been large volumes of research about non-pharmaceutical interventions and the implementation of lockdown regulations as effective measures to flatten the curve while in the grip of the deadly pandemic. Professor of Vaccinology at the University of Witwatersrand, Dr. Shabir Madi, agrees. But he adds that it would be difficult to bring to an abrupt halt economic and social activities in a country such as South Africa, because housing, unemployment and poverty are an undeniable challenge.
The reality is that most people are needing to survive hand to mouth, in that they need to go out, look for small jobs to be able to get funds, money to put food on the table. So although it was a strategy that South Africa pursued, I think subsequently it was shown that that strategy at best probably delayed the rest of the pandemic or the transmission of the virus by a few weeks rather than interrupting transmission of the virus.
For 27-year-old Thabiso Hlengetwa in KwaZulu-Natal, the ghost of lockdown restrictions came back to haunt him when he nearly lost what he describes as a great opportunity to pursue his dream in drone aviation. When the restrictions were relaxed to allow outdoor exercise, an eager Thabiso jumped on the opportunity for a little freedom and hit the tarmac.
I was jogging and the mask, there was a restriction for mask that if you go outside without mask, you'll get arrested. So I was jogging. And I couldn't jog with a mask on. So I put a mask in my pocket. And while I was jogging, there were police which were patrolling the area where I live. And when they came across me jogging, I tried to go to a different direction from the one that they were coming from. And then next thing happened, I hear the police van behind my back They were chasing me, in fact. And then what happened was that they put me at the back of the van, and then they told me that I'm not wearing a mask, and then they took me straight to the police station. I tried to explain to them that I cannot jog with a mask on. And then when you go to the police station, they took fingerprints and stuff like that, but I thought it was just a minor thing, you know. I just thought that this was not going to affect my career and stuff like that. And then I went on with my life. After 5 years, which is this year, I got enrolled in a program, this program that I am in right now. They had to take fingerprints for security and stuff like that. And I declared that I do not have a criminal record.
Did you even stay in the cells overnight or anything like that?
I think we stayed in the cell for, 4 to 5 hours. And then we got bailed. I think it was a 200-rand bail.
So now you apply, now you get the screening, and the results come back, and they say, no, you've actually been convicted. And you're like, what?
Yeah, and the results when they came back was I was in class, got interrupted in class, because then I was called, and they said that the senior HR needs to meet with me. I went to her office. When I got there, she told me that the results for the fingerprints are back, and I am a criminal. They have to fire me. And I was like, why do you have to fire me? She then explained to me she needed an idea, whether do I know what happened. To tell you, I didn't even recall until she told me when did this thing happen.
In late 2023, Parliament passed the bill to expunge criminal records of people who were convicted of breaking the COVID-19 lockdown rules. According to reports, there are more than 400,000 people affected by these arrests. Tabiso only learned that this was possible when he faced the possibility of losing out on a career opportunity.
What then happens? Obviously, HR has its own procedures. You
yes.
clearly have a criminal record, if that is what
yes.
the facts are. How did you manage to come back from that?
I spoke with them. I went back home, and I thought about it that I need to go to police station and do a police clearance. And then I went there. They told me that I need to come from 8 to 12 with a 180 rand so that I can get a police clearance. And then I did the process. I paid the 180 rand. They took my fingerprints, and they told me that I'll receive a message that I've been cleared. And then fortunately, during festive, I think before the 31st of December, I got a message saying that I have been cleared, and then I took the letter that they gave me for the certificate to the HR department and told them that I have been cleared.
So let's get personal. Let's talk about the feelings that you experienced through all of this. What were you thinking? What were you feeling when HR comes to you and says, "Sir, but we can't take you"?
You know, the first thing, I couldn't even speak. I was like, what's going on here? Like, why do I have a criminal record I do not know of? And it got into... They thought that I was questioning, like, life, like, why? What's happening after all the hard work, after going through the interviews, after writing the assessments? Why do I have to be, like, judged for something that I was just innocent of? But I then realized that it was just a COVID-19 effect, and it's something that I have to stand for it, and it's going to pass. But to be honest, I was really shocked.
So if you think back to the lockdown restrictions, obviously they had to happen for lives to be saved. But do you think that maybe they weren't communicated properly, because then you would have had a better understanding? So if you're not wearing your mask, this is what you're risking. And that even with the police, when they arrest you, it should have been their duty that they explain to you, when we book you in, this is what the consequences of your actions are going to be. So when you think about the restrictions, do you think that the government went overboard, or do you still believe that the restrictions were necessary? It was just the fortune that you ended up in this kind of situation.
From their side, I think it was for a good cause, because the pandemic was spreading and stuff like that. But I think the police should have explained to me, like, the effect of what happened. Like, they had to tell me that I will be criminally convicted and have a criminal record. But I think from their side, they couldn't do something like that. And maybe they were also overwhelmed, because a lot was happening, to be honest, during that time.
Tabiso was lucky. He was able to turn his fortunes around and move from a past that could have cost him his future. But for others, the scars of the lockdown period run deep, and the pain still lingers. One such person is Kopano Mulapisi from Soweto.
I grew up with Molalo in the same neighborhood. I've known her for 20 years or so before her passing. And we grew closer the minute we attended church. We became friends and the relationship grew to being a brotherly, sisterly relationship.
Mulalo Lorraine Nemukula was a warrior, a humble and selfless lover of life who was also a fashionista and the life of the party wherever she went.
Mulalo was selfless. She was a giver of note and she put other people's interest above hers in most cases. And Mulalo had so much love in her. She really didn't want to see another human being going through struggles or suffering. She'd rather sacrifice everything that she has to make another person happy. If I can recall, there were moments where I also had some financial challenges and I needed to do some function at home. And Mulalo, from nowhere, she chose to give me her credit card and said, I will pay her whenever I have money. And that humbled me greatly because I didn't expect anyone to help me. And Mulalo had adopted two or three young boys who wanted to go to college and should make sure that those kids have got money to go to college, to provide for transport money, lunch money. When they need winter clothes, she'll make sure that they get winter clothes. So Mulalo, she was a giver.
Mulalo had survived breast cancer and was in the clear when a routine checkup brought back the nightmare. The cancer was back, and this time more aggressively. But as she waged yet another battle for her life, her support system, her friends, family, and the network of fellow survivors that worked with her to promote awareness could not rally around her because the diagnosis came during the worst period of the pandemic and the community that supported her were afraid of exposing her already fragile body.
Yeah, you're taking me back to the most painful period of my life. And I think Mulalo didn't die from cancer. I think that we need to also highlight. I'm not a doctor, but Mulalo didn't die from cancer. Her immune system was weak because of cancer. And when COVID found its way into her system, her immune system was compromised completely. I was in communication with Mulalo a day before her passing through texts. She wanted me to help her niece with a project. And I don't like texting. I'm a caller. So we continued on texting and texting. And when I called, she didn't answer my calls. I got angry. I didn't know that Mulalo was weak at the time. And in the morning, we continued texting to each other. And she just said, bless her, I'm in hospital. And I knew Mulalo was in and out of hospital, so I knew she'd come back. But fast forward to around lunchtime, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I got a call from her niece. And I thought it was a continuation of our discussion because I was helping her with a project. And she was like, Papa, no, I've got some bad news for you. Mulalo has passed. It hit me hard.
Mulalo Nemukula passed away on the 18th of January, 2021. The family was saddled with the unthinkable task of organizing and conducting a dignified funeral under lockdown restrictions, which prohibited night vigils and limited mourners to only 50. Those who did attend had to get permits from the court or a police station, and once there, strict social distancing regulations were in place at all times. Mourners couldn't hug each other, and they couldn't physically support one another, standing and sitting alone while wearing masks and regularly sanitizing their hands. At the cemetery, health officials in white hazmat suits, visors, masks, disposable head covers and gloves, lowered her coffin into the ground.
It was so difficult. I remember one of the things that we completely forgot was the fumigation before and after. You know, we just didn't want anyone to contract COVID through the journey we were traveling. When it was time to shrink the numbers to 50, that was the most difficult part. And, you know, people, you know, they came to the funeral, but they social distanced. They stood about 5-10 meters away from the proceedings, and it was so painful because they wanted to be there. But I remember every time I had to go home very early because there was a curfew. You know, when I drive back home in the evening, the streets were empty, and that was the time where I could think about her. And sorrow came rushing down, and I remember I parked on the side of the road and I broke down because I didn't want people to see me crying.
Grief. It's a natural and human response to loss. However, it's often only recognized as such when the loss pertains to the death of a loved one. But we can grieve a lot more than just death. Many still find themselves struggling to cope with the losses brought about by the pandemic and the resultant government-imposed restrictions. At the time, the loss of freedom of movement, and then later, the loss of employment and income, loss of assets such as homes and cars, missed opportunities like offers to work abroad, loss of good health for those suffering from long COVID or related long-term ailment, and the loss of bodily autonomy, when many were given little choice but to vaccinate. While there's some positives to take from this period, like the efficiency of online learning and shopping, the bolstering of healthcare systems, the scientific advances made locally and abroad, we must admit that some may have survived the pandemic, others may have even dodged infection, but none of us can ever deny that the psychological scars of the COVID-19 pandemic remain etched in our minds. Clinical psychologist Mombele shares his professional opinion on the many losses individuals experienced during the pandemic, from the loss of loved ones, assets, opportunities, and ideals to the forgotten hopes and dreams. This is what he calls the narcissistic blow or injury.
Now, please forget everything you've heard, particularly on very popular social media, TikTok and so on and so forth, and a lot of internet around what narcissism is. And for this argument, perhaps let me say, it was a blow to our idea that we don't need anything or anyone else. We can be self-determining. We can do everything ourselves, and nothing will make us vulnerable. Nothing will make us needy. Nothing will make us sick. Nothing will make us impoverished. Nothing will control us. Nothing will be our authority. It was a loss to all of those things. It was a loss to an idea that we are ultimate as individuals and as a collective, and we can suffer no vulnerability.
About the loss of loved ones, in addition to the restrictions on traditional mourning rituals, Bella says part of the grieving process may have been disrupted by the loss of faces, names, and individuality of those who succumbed to the pandemic as thousands across the globe became daily statistics.
That individual who was incredibly unique to you and was the only father, mother, spouse, sibling, child, friend, if they were the only one of those to you, kind of got aggregated into this, or they were part of a COVID loss. They now became one of millions that were lost. And we'll know and remember, kind of, even in the subtleties of the nuances of how we would report those losses. There'd be statistics aggregated on television. But even when we spoke about them, we'd say, this person died of COVID, or they also died of COVID, or we'd ask, have you lost anybody at COVID? As if that loss wasn't personal and unique in and of itself, and that uniqueness was taken away.
5 years later, Bella says the impact of the pandemic is playing itself out on the social and political stage.
You look at where the world is, particularly socio-politically, which is many things, but definitely a bad place. I think that there is something to be said around a global response, which is much more around sovereignty, locking up borders or self-determination, returning to a point of crisis where you have to be self-preservative as a collective, that I think is absolutely linked to COVID. So whether it is kind of near an individual, but a collective state of we will choose what happens to us into our bodies and into education and so on and so forth, as much as on a global spectrum, we will choose who comes in and out of our borders in order to, in inverted commas, keep ourselves safe and exclude others. I think that is part of the impact to your question around autonomy and self-determination that I think we never really imagined would go as far as these kind of much, much, much more macro constitutional, institutional decision-making around autonomy of a collective and of an idea. And I think we'll be better off knowing of the link than acting something out. But one of the reasons I think there is a rise in kind of social violence and even like domestic violence, and there is a rise in criminality, hostility, there's a rise in pushing people away and out, there's a rise in anger, there's a rise in suicides and homicides, there's a rise in the presentation of severe psychopathology. This is the material impact of when you have psychedelic trauma and you take away thinking spaces.
Whether as individuals, as a nation, or the global community, we must acknowledge that perhaps in our haste to reclaim our freedom, shed the COVID new normal, and rush back into our old lives, we missed a crucial step.
I think kind of 5 years later, which I think a lot of people will find bizarre to know that it's been 5 years, part of what I am sure expecting to some extent I've seen is that we're returning to that grief and are getting to know that perhaps we didn't grieve properly, perhaps we didn't grieve enough. And unfortunately for many people in many instances, there wasn't even a time to grieve. Not just the what was lost, but in very many ways, the who was lost.
Sit. Reflect. Look within and do the hard work towards true healing. As for COVID, the pandemic may be over, but the virus is still very much around. I, for one, tested positive at the end of last year, but with far less fear and fuss. So, when you see the occasional mask and a spritz of sanitizer, take a moment and remember just how far we have come.
COVID Chronicles, 5 years after masks, thermometers, and my fellow South Africans, is an original Jackpot podcast brought to you by Jacaranda FM News. Jacaranda FM cannot be held responsible for the views and comments expressed in this podcast. Follow Jacaranda FM News on Facebook and X, or go to jacarandafm.com and click on News. Listen to more episodes and original series at jacarandafm.com, click on Jackpot, or wherever you get all your other podcasts.